Welcome back to the Pistol Aspiring Podcast. This is Kyle Porter. This is our 11th episode of the fall. Carson Cunningham is going to join me soon to talk about the Oklahoma State West Virginia game, OU Texas, and a ton of other things going on around the country right now. So we appreciate you guys listening. If you're interested in sponsoring the podcast, we're still looking for that. We would love to have a title sponsor for the rest of the fall. You can reach out and email us at pistolsfiringblog@gmail.com, and we can get you some more details on that. But until then, enjoy the podcast.
Welcome back to the Pistols Firing Podcast, where this podcast is undefeated, Kyle. I went on the road to Dallas, did the podcast with Clint Chelf on the road, but we still found a way to get it done. We've had a guest drop out. We've still done the podcast on the road. We are undefeated, much like the Oklahoma State Cowboys.
And much like the Oklahoma State Cowboy uniforms. Everybody's undefeated right now. This late into the season, it's pretty awesome. I will say the one team that's not undefeated anymore is Oklahoma. What happened?
Well, I was there, and I still don't really believe what I saw. We had an hour-long pregame show on KOCO, and we pretty much dogged Texas for an hour. And I predicted a blowout. Brian predicted a blowout. But I will say this, and this is not making excuses or anything, but the night before in our hotel, I was talking to Brian. I was like, man, the more I look at, like, the more I studied this and the more I looked at it, the more I wanted to pick a close game, because Texas was not really as bad as their resume said, like their record said. Like, they played some really good teams, had some horrible luck, and I wasn't totally sure that OU could just run the ball on them, because they hadn't run the ball on anybody. And if they couldn't run the ball, then they would have to have big plays in the passing game. And Baker Mayfield, as great as he's been this year, there's been times where they've struggled and they just found a way to come up with a monster play at the right time. I think back to the West Virginia game, they had the walls were closing in on them. They're only up three and they hit this pump and go, and then all of a sudden they're off to the races. And I the more I thought about it, I was like, man, if they don't hit a big play in the passing game, this could be a long day for them. And then of course, when we all knew Texas had to get off to a fast start, force a turnover, they did all that, and OU never recovered. And It's stunning that in three straight years, Texas has been by far the worst team, but they've outplayed OU. I don't know how you explain it. You think back to all the games Stoops has lost over his career. He's lost he's lost to teams that don't even belong on the same field as him. I think the 2011 Texas Tech game at home, I think a third of his losses have come as a double-digit favorite, which to me is insane. So as crazy as it was, there's a trend there. So I don't know. It was tough to understand as it was happening.
It is weird. Jake Trotter had a stat in a piece that he did about how, I think it was like over the last 5 years, nobody's lost more games when they were favored to win by, like, it's the ESPN deal, like FPI or whatever, and it gives you a percentage. Like, you should win this game 80% of the time, 90% of the time. Nobody's lost more of those when they were favored by 80%, which was kind of the benchmark, than OU. And, I mean, people joke about Stoops, but it is weird. Like, I thought what was even weirder, I know we're going to get to the Oklahoma State-West Virginia game, but I wanted to talk about this real quick. What was weirder, did you see what he said on Monday about how he said something like, you know, you can blame me all you want, but I don't play the games. And it was like, what? Like, that I don't know. That struck me as a really bizarre thing to kind of follow that game up with.
Yeah, that sounded weird, didn't it? It sounded like he almost was just like, hey, don't blame me. I'm not the one out there playing, which I do think he's in a really tough spot in those press conferences, because if you say something one way, then, well, it can be misconstrued another. Like, what's he going to say? Like, they got their butts kicked. I mean, if he does the Charlie Strong line, well, they play good, give them the credit. If we play bad, blame me. Like, even if he says that, fans aren't going to buy it. So he's really in a no-win situation. But I don't think I would have said the way he did. But I don't know. It's pretty crazy how badly they got punched in the face and didn't really recover. And the biggest concern for them is Samaje Perine is, like, just a guy now. And he was their best player last year. So they got a lot of issues.
You're right about Texas, though. And it really speaks to, I think, more, like, bigger than the Texas OU game, it speaks to how much importance we place on winning. And this has become an issue for me, like, in golf tournaments, because you look at, you know, not to bring Ricky Fowler into this, like 3 minutes into the podcast, but you look at Ricky Fowler in 2014 when he finished top five at all the majors and never won one. Some of his best performances were, or really for his whole career, his best performances came in which another person had an historic performance. And so I think that we place so much emphasis and importance on winning in all sports that we almost can't look past the fact that, say, Oklahoma State and Texas played basically exactly the same in the Oklahoma State-Texas game, and it's just that Oklahoma State won at the very end. And it's that doesn't make them, like, this much better team, but we think it does because they got the win and Texas got the loss.
Well, winning cures everything. I mean, OSU 6-0. Like, they could easily be 3-3, and
I know
your blog would be just meltdown mode in the comment section. It changes everything. And I do think it speaks so well to OSU's defense in that Jerrod Hurd and Texas couldn't do anything against them, against Oklahoma State. Mm-hmm. And they ran at will. They basically lined up and said, "Oh, you know we're not throwing, but we're going to run it down your throat."
They threw 12 times.
Yeah, they didn't even pretend like they were going to throw,
12 times.
Much like they did against Oklahoma State, and Oklahoma State stuffed them, and OU said, "Well, you're just going to run right over us, aren't you?" And that's basically what happened.
By the way, are you okay there? Did something?
I kicked my plate that I had breakfast on. I'm sorry.
Wow.
Did you pick that up?
I thought your dog might have had a heart attack or something.
My plates are undefeated. I didn't break any. So winning cures all, Kyle.
What was the atmosphere like down there? Was it, I've actually never been to Texas OU, even though I live like 15 miles from the Cotton Bowl.
Well, it was only my second one ever. I used to be the guy that had to stay back at the TV station all these years, but the last two I've been to, and I was expecting OU fans to take over the Texas side, but that was not the case at all. It was 50-50. There was a little bit of red maybe sprinkled on the orange side, but it was 50-50. It's so cool. Like, when you're there, you're like, man, they should never move this game ever. It's so cool being at the state fair because, like, people don't tailgate there. They just walk into the fair and walk around. It's unbelievable. And what really was startling was, I guess, Charlie Strong, like, the buses pull in and they all get off just right by the tunnel and everybody waves and everything. But Charlie Strong, like, had the bus park, like, further away than it normally does, and he got out with the team, and they walked through the OU crowd, and all the fans, and Texas fans were there too, but they walked through the crowd to the stadium, which at the time I was like, is this the walk of shame? What is going on here? And a guy that, Kyle Hamm, one of our photographers, has been at Channel 5 for, like, 30 years, has been to, like, every OU-Texas game for 30 years, was like, I don't think that's ever happened before.
Wow.
So obviously, he got his boys ready to play, and maybe that was part of the psychological warfare going on. Like, hey, you're going to walk through here, and we're going to be ready to play. So he mixed it up to get his guys ready to play. Obviously, Bob needs to do something else because the last 3 years they've been taken to task.
Yeah, it really is crazy to think about. Texas is what 2-4 now. They could be 4-2. I mean, the Notre Dame game and the TCU game were obviously blowouts, but Cal and Oklahoma State. I mean, they could easily have the same record as, I mean, Oklahoma State and Texas could really easily have the same record, and they don't. And it's just, I don't know.
Texas still stinks, let's be honest.
No, I know, but I'm just saying record-wise. Like, they're playing these kind of, you know, two of their losses have been really close.
And they played them close. Yeah.
They've come down to special teams. So,
speaking of close, Morgantown.
Oh, my gosh. Did you see the stat I tweeted out yesterday?
Mm-mm.
The last four conference games, Oklahoma State has not led with 1 minute to go in each of them. And they've won them all. That's unbelievable, isn't it?
It's I don't want to say the name because – but what happened to Squinky? Where is he at? Is he hiding? Like, this is like 30 years of bad luck, like, rolled into this year for good luck. It's like 30 years of karma all thrown into 1 year. I mean, not only just – the way they're winning the games, but some of the calls they've gotten. I mean, they've been fortunate, haven't they? I joked on our show that I wonder if Gundy listened to a lot of Bon Jovi back in '88, you know, riding in the Trans Am, living on a prayer.
Well, think about, okay, so yes, the luck that they've gotten this year and the breaks they've gotten have been unbelievable. But think about even the schedule. How perfect is the schedule in terms of you've now got Texas and West Virginia out of the way. You've basically got a double bye week. You've got the bye week and then you've got Kansas. And if you can get to that Halloween game still undefeated, I mean, you've got all these games at home, you know, like it's crazy because everything does set up so perfectly. Now, I don't think they're going to go 12-0. I don't think they're going to go 11-1, but it has been a, you know, like couldn't we put all these breaks in a year in which they were like a better team, you know?
You would have liked one in 2011, I'm sure.
Yeah, or even 2010. I mean, Taylor Martinez, you know, like, I don't know.
Or 2013, the Bedlam game.
Yeah.
Freezing cold. But I watched the game coming back from Dallas. I watched the first half at a Chili's in Lewisville, Texas. That was fun. And then I watched it on the laptop on ESPN3 going back to Oklahoma City.
Yeah, do you have, like, Wi-Fi everywhere on your
house? We have an air card that we use to send back like stories and stuff.
Okay.
And it also is a dual thread. It can punch up ESPN3.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
But yeah, it was an entertaining game, I'll say that. It was funny though. I was making all these jokes about Gundy settling for field goals and turning Donald Trump, and I want to make t-shirts that says make OK State air raid again.
I love that. That's so good.
Can you like work with your t-shirt guy and get those made? I mean, I'll come up with a design and we can split the profit.
The problem is your Venn diagram of like Oklahoma State fans and people who like, is that offensive to Donald Trump?
What? Make Oklahoma State air raid again?
Yeah.
Oh, like Gundy being conservative?
Yeah.
Well, we can throw Donald Trump by the wayside. Just make OK State air raid again. Okay. Put that on the shirt.
I like
put
that. Yeah.
Put Dana and Todd's head to each side. Like the back can say Dana Todd 2016 maybe. Print them up. Those will sell like hotcakes.
That's good. I like that. I do wish Gundy would have a Dabo Sweeney moment where he said, "What was the statement after the Notre Dame game? Bring your guts," or whatever it was.
I missed that. I just saw the post-game interview. It was raining.
Yeah,
that's screaming.
That's where he said. He said, "You got to bring your guts," or something like that. I was like, some Clemson blogger is going to make like $10 million tomorrow selling shirts that say, "Bring your guts."
Yep, pretty much.
But yeah,
burn them up.
The overtime.
Do what?
The fourth down call is what you're getting ready to say.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, he's settling for field goals, and all of a sudden, it's fourth and one, and I was listening to the radio broadcast, too, while watching ESPN3, because the feed was behind, and it's a long story, but there was a sense that I got and that John Holcomb got on the radio broadcast and Dave, like, that they had to go for it or they were going to lose the game. Now, part of me also said, you got to kick here, because if you don't get it, that Lambert guy is already in field goal range, but Gundy knows his team better than I do, obviously. He said they were tired. And it ultimately was the right move. I didn't realize the defense was as gassed as he said they were, but it was a gutsy move. And I gotta admit, Kyle, I was pretty wrong on the Walsh package, whatever the heck you want to call it. Back when they were doing it with Chelf too, remember that? They even started doing it way back then.
Yeah.
I didn't think he was big enough to make it work. Like, he's not a Swoops. He's certainly not a Tebow, to where if it's 1 yard to go and he runs it up the middle, I didn't think it would work. And it's been a great wrinkle, and it's really helped their running game, especially in the red zone. Like, I was wrong about it. It's worked, and it was a great play by Walsh because it was kind of stuffed, and he made a great move to make it work. So I got to admit, I'm eating a little bit of crow on the Walsh package.
Yeah, the Walsh thing, I was thinking about this yesterday. It's almost like, and I don't like the platoon quarterback thing. I hate it. I think it's just the worst. But it's almost like you've just got like a red zone running back that you're bringing in, you know, like,
yeah.
it's very different than I think a lot of quarterback platoons, and it's really effective. I mean, they ran the diamond with him and scored a touchdown on Dana in Morgantown, which was amazing. And you know, I just feel like, and I think I wrote this on Monday, but I've felt like that Walsh has been kind of a good, like, sideshow all year, but now I just feel like he's just kind of part of the offense, which is a weird thing to say about a backup quarterback, but he scores all the time. Like, he comes in and scores touchdowns, and if you do that, I mean, you are part of the offense, and I don't know, it's really interesting. Did you think, and I can't, the reason I ask this is I can't remember it, at the time, like, when Oklahoma State lined up to go for it on fourth down, did you think it was a good decision, or did you think it was a bad decision?
When they decided they were going for it, I thought it was a bad decision. Okay. I thought if you don't get it here, Lambert is already in field goal range. Like, that's an easy field goal for him. You lose the game if you don't get it right here. But I'm in a car driving past Ardmore, Oklahoma. I didn't realize the defense was exhausted. I didn't realize that Gundy just wanted to. Okay. Plus, if you're on the road too, it's much more acceptable to go for it, I feel like. If you're on the road, your defense is exhausted. At the time, I was being a little Donald Trumpish, a little conservative, but it was obviously the right call.
Yeah, I can't remember.
I think the hindsight would have been brutal. You know, if they don't get it, like, isn't Gundy getting ripped? That's just how college football goes, you know?
Yeah. I can't – the reason I ask is I can't remember in the moment how I felt, because it all happened pretty quickly. And I can't objectively say afterwards whether I thought it was good or bad, because obviously it turned out good. And I don't want that to sort of affect, like, how I felt about the decision in the moment. I think I thought it was good at the time. And, you know, like you said, I mean, West Virginia ran 98 plays on Saturday. Yeah. That is, I think, the fifth or sixth most that's ever been run against a Gundy team. And I mean,
well, and I'm probably in the minority, because, like I said, John Holcomb sensed it. I think the TV guys also sensed it, that if they didn't go for it and get it, they were going to lose the game. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, it's true. And, but, you know, I really thought it was interesting, though, because I thought after the third quarter, I can't remember what the score was. I think OSU was up 4-6 or something like that. I really thought whoever got – The turnover battle at the time was tied 3-3. I really thought whoever got the fourth turnover would end up winning the game, and that's what happened. But it didn't happen the way I thought it would happen, because Oklahoma State creates this turnover on West Virginia's 11-yard line, and then doesn't even really try to score. I mean, did you watch that? What was that?
That's what inspired the Donald Trump make Oklahoma State air raid again.
I mean, that was embarrassing.
Like, it was the Texas game all over again, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You know, just settling for a field goal. Like, and that's also, too, another reason. Like, I don't know what happened there. I mean, I could talk about that all day. But that's another reason I kind of thought you should kick it, is that, like, obviously Gundy trusts his defense, or was playing for his defense to win the game. I feel like with your defense you have in overtime, I make West Virginia score a touchdown. That's another reason I probably would have kicked it. I don't want them to just be able to set up and line up a field goal and beat me. I want them to have to cross the goal line to beat me. But it all worked out. Hindsight's 20/20.
Well, and the other thing is, you say you kick a field goal from right there, but that's extra point range. And extra point range has not been very good the last, three or four weeks. I'm working on a post about how, I mean, should Oklahoma State just start going for two?
I would not have a problem with that at all.
Their extra point percentage, I think, is like 84 or something like that. You know, of course, me and percentages on the podcast never works that well. But it's I think they're like 22 for 26. I think it's around 84, 82%, something like that. You only have to get a 2-point conversion, 4.5 out of 10 times to match that, or to be better than that.
Well, I'd like to see what their red zone percentages are, as far as, you know, from that situation.
Yeah, I was trying to find, like, somebody who had or a site that had broken down every individual play to see how often they had gained at least 2 yards. I guess would be the thing, like, inside the red zone or whatever. I couldn't find it, but,
well, I think more NFL teams should go for it, because they move the extra points back. And if I'm Gundy and we can't make an extra point, I would start going for it too. I mean, Oregon used to do that every time they scored.
At what point does that become an issue? Like, we kind of joke about it, but it could have cost you the last two games, you know.
Yeah.
And you've got Walsh down there. I don't know. I think it would be interesting. I think it's, this team needs points any way they can get them. So if that's the way you do it, then maybe you think about it.
We need to talk about Emmanuel Ogba.
Yeah, he's unbelievable. Like,
easily the best defensive player Gundy's ever had. He's climbing the ladder, though, with all those guys from the 80s.
Yeah. He's 7.5 sacks, all of the fumble recovery. I thought his quote after about the touchdown that he scored was hilarious. He said something like, I didn't even know I scored. He's like, I was like everybody else. I just kind of fell into the end zone, and there was the ball. But
the tackle he made, I can't remember what moment it was. I think it might have been third or fourth quarter, where Skylar Howard was scrambling and ran up the middle, and Ogba like flies from behind and tackles him from behind short of the first down. It was terrifying.
Yeah.
Like, guys that big should not be able to do that.
Did you see the picture of him like hulking over Skylar Howard that was going around on Twitter?
Yeah, that was an incredible photo.
That was insane.
Like I wouldn't sleep for a week if I was Skylar Howard. Would you?
No. It is, you know.
Was he this good, like, as a freshman and sophomore? Or he just, like, coming to his own? Like, I remember that, I think it was a sophomore year, the freezing cold Baylor game in 2013. He had a couple sacks, and I was like, who is number 38? Ogba? Who is this? So, like, obviously he's been pretty good for a while, but, man, he has turned into maybe the best defensive player in the country. I mean, who's better than him?
Yeah. Well, Sean Oakman, of course.
I mean, does Oakman have the production that...
No, I'm being sarcastic.
He looks like, you know, the Incredible Hulk.
Yeah, it's been impressive to see, you know, I think the follow-up year after the breakout year, if you can continue production, I think it's even more impressive. I mean, I go back and look at Blackman in 2011. I thought what he did in 2011 was way more impressive than 2010. Because 2010, it's like you're unconscious. Nobody knows who you are, what you're doing. Like, it's just...
Yeah, I remember Blackman's first game. I think it was 2010. He scored like 3 touchdowns in the opener. I was like, oh, that's cool. He had like 3 touchdowns in a game. Great, good for him. That might be his season total,
right,
in the first game. Because no one knew what Justin Blackman was at that point.
Yeah. And so for Ogba to follow up what he did last year, this year, with new, you know, a couple of new defensive tackles, people focusing on him, basically, you know, Texas was like double and triple teaming him, and he was still disrupting, you know, enough linemen to allow guys to come in for sacks and for quarterback hurry. I mean, it transforms your defense. And Gundy said that after the game. He said, you know, it basically elevates us to being a great elite defense, and it's true. I mean, he's been unbelievable.
It's bizarre to watch OSU and rely on the defense, isn't it? Like, you feel more confident when the defense is out there rather than the offense. Isn't this like bizarro world for us?
It's very strange, because I would rather the defense be out there with like a 3-point lead than the offense be out there if you're tied. and that's not that's not historically what anybody has thought about Oklahoma State football, and it is disconcerting. Somebody emailed me that on Saturday night and said I don't know what to do with this team. Like, I've never experienced this, where the defense is so much better than the offense, and we have to trust, you know, in our punter and in, you know, all these different things that I mean, Gundy punted from West Virginia's 34-yard line. And it's like, I mean, but it worked out. You know, 3 plays later, Ogba falls on a touchdown in the end zone. And
Kyle, I wanted Gundy to punt on third down in Austin.
I mean, it's...
I wanted him to punt on third down.
it's very strange. I don't know. I'm sort of at a loss. But, hey, you're one of 6 teams in the country that's 6-0.
It's amazing. And I do like the things they're doing now on offense. They're getting a little more creative. But don't you remember when 33 points was like a half for OSU?
Yeah. I mean, yes, I do. Yeah, they just don't score. And it feels like, I know I mentioned this before, it feels like they either put together like a 93-yard drive, or they're three and out. Like there's nothing. There's a great website, bcftoys.com, and that sounds weird saying it out loud, but it's got a bunch of like FBS data, and they're one of the best teams in the country in points per drive on, I think it's 80 plus yard drives. They're like top 5 or 10 in the country.
But how do you explain that?
I don't know. I don't understand, because if you look at this offense, you wouldn't say, oh yeah, they're definitely going to string together a long drive, but they have, and they do. The problem is they only do it like once or twice a game. And I don't know. What did you think about Mason Rudolph on Saturday?
Well, he's thrown too many picks. I mean, not all of them were his fault, but I mean, you can't be throwing as many interceptions as he is. It's a little concerning, you got to say. I mean, the defense has bailed him out, but I thought he would have been better at this point in the season than he has.
Yeah. I thought there's an Ocali reporter, Nathan Ruiz, I think is how you say his last name. We had a good stat about him, home and away, like for his career. He's been just worlds better at home. And I think that's to be expected. I think it was you that tweeted that, you know, once he becomes a junior or senior, he will have played in every situation imaginable on the road.
Yeah, like his heart won't even like skip a beat in like Norman in 2 years.
Yeah, exactly. But and I mean, this season, really, you have what, Tech and Iowa State left on the road? That's it. So, I'm interested to see how he comes home and performs against TCU, Baylor, and OU.
Yeah, and I mean, he's the guy. Like, he's the quarterback. There's no other way to turn. Like, no one's going to Walsh full time. So he's got to figure it out. And I think it helps him knowing that he's got a leash now. Yeah. I think there was a question about that after Austin.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They didn't yank him around this time around. So I'm confident he'll play well. I mean, I'm confident he's the quarterback we thought he was. It's just he's thrown a little too many interceptions at this point.
Yeah.
Which is going to happen. He's a sophomore. Like, you got to let him play. And, you know, if he's still doing this by the time he's a senior, I'd be stunned.
Did you see what – first of all, how much did you enjoy Dana on Saturday?
I predicted he was going to be bald by the fourth quarter. He was just ripping his hair out, what hair he had left. And he's an experience. Like, shouldn't every West Virginia game they show, like, have a box down in the lower left corner just of him?
Yeah.
Just a Dana cam at all times?
Yeah. It's really a travesty that Watch ESPN doesn't have a channel devoted to his reactions throughout the – I mean, because you can pull up – like, on Watch ESPN, you can have multiple games going at the same time. There should – absolutely be a Dana channel. I mean, how is that not
happening? A Dana channel with like a ticker at the bottom, like telling you how many headsets he's broken, how many F-bombs have been said. Like, I want all the numbers to go with the pictures as well.
I like that. That's good. Did you see the other thing I was going to ask you? Did you see Evan Epstein's tweet about about this defense being on the 2010-11 teams?
This guy's a must follow, isn't he? Like, I feel like every game there's some stuff to be learned from his Twitter account.
I think we need to reach out to him.
He might be a good guest to have.
Yeah, I think that needs to happen.
And he was one of the better quotes on that 2011 team. He played center, I believe, and he was awesome to talk to. And he basically keeps it real. So I think everyone knows he's right. Had that 2011 team had this defense, they would have destroyed everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
Did you agree with him where he said Gundy coaches kids that don't give up, they've always been true, and why he is a valuable coach?
I thought that was great, and I feel like, you know, Gundy's goofy, and he does weird stuff, and he's kind of bizarre sometimes, but I feel like he's a good football coach, and I feel like his players sort of appreciate his quirks, even if they don't always agree with him. And they play hard for him, and he's hired really good assistants in you know, obviously Holgorsen and Munkin and Spencer and Yurcich is debatable, I guess, but I don't know. He's done a really good job, and I thought that was a cool sort of synopsis of just sort of Oklahoma State football over the last decade.
Well, we mock his Gundy-isms. You know, he does everything right. Football's important to him.
Loves his family.
Loves his family. Doesn't say a word.
That's it. He's real big on people who don't talk,
I think. Yeah, he loves mutes in football players. But, like, all those Gundy-isms are what he looks for in recruits, and it's what he loves. Yeah. And those are the type of guys that'll play their hearts out. You know, as cheesy as that sounds, that's kind of where he's coming from on that. Does that picture I tweeted out when, making fun of me when he went for it, that smirk, that Gundy smirk photo?
Yeah.
Doesn't that sum up the season to this point?
Yeah.
Like, you thought we were losing, didn't you? That's kind of the face he's making.
Yeah, it does. And it's...
I'm gonna tweet out that picture again.
I mean, there's no chance this team is going to win the Big 12, is there?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
Do you?
No, not really. But those games at home, I can't get past the fact that you got TCU, Baylor, and OU at home, and
that's true.
The problem is you need to. I don't think you're certainly not going to go undefeated and win it. But if you get some teams to lose the right games, I don't know. It could get interesting at the end. I don't know how.
They are tough to beat at home. I will say that. I don't have the numbers in front of me on OSU under Gundy, but it's not easy to go into Stillwater and win, just the way the stadium's built and the teams they've had.
Well, I mean, the thing you're rooting for now, which I think is fascinating, you want OU to win out, right?
Yeah, you always want them to.
Well, but now, because you want OU to beat TCU, you want them to beat Baylor, and then
yeah,
I can't go through every like scenario, but then if you beat one of those teams, then you've probably got OU for the Big 12 title at the end of the year, which has happened time and time again over the last 5 or 6 years.
Are you prepared for Baylor to win 3 straight Big 12 championships, Kyle?
I think it's going to happen. They are unbelievable. And there's a great, again, that BCF Toys website. I was looking at, so there's this stat.
You've spent a lot of time on this questionable website.
Yeah, it does sound weird, but it's a great website. People should go check it out. There's a stat called yards per stop. And what that means is how many yards does your offense gain before it stopped. And so that includes like if you score a touchdown, you are obviously not stopped. So those yards continue through the next drive until somebody makes you punt or turns it over, essentially. Does that make sense?
I'm sorry, I was tweeting at the Gundy face. I didn't hear a word you said. This is important.
We'll trust that people listening.
Hey, we gotta talk about Gundy to USC. Your thoughts?
Well, hold on. I want to finish. I didn't finish my statement.
I'm sorry. This Gundy face is too funny. I'm sorry. I was distracted.
So anyway, this stat, like how many yards do you gain before somebody makes you punt or turns you over?
Right.
There's two teams over 100 yards per basically extended drive. I think Oklahoma State gains on average like 37 yards until they're stopped, which is okay. It's not bad. It's not great. Texas Tech gains, I think, 104 yards before they're stopped on average, which is pretty crazy because they score a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Baylor gains on average 193 yards before they're stopped.
Gosh.
Almost twice as much as the team that's in second, which is Texas Tech. It's unbelievable. I mean, we talk about it every week, but people need to just run the Baylor offense and hope they have a better defense.
All right, I'm pulling up the Baylor schedule. Who are they? I feel like when they lose to like a K-State or a West Virginia. They don't ever lose to like the upper echelon. They got West Virginia at home this week. They'll probably win that. At K-State. At OSU, at TCU. That's not easy.
That's brutal. At K-State's going to be slugfest. I mean, yeah. They're way better than K-State, but that's going to be tough.
That's you don't want to go to Manhattan, as OU's about to find out. That's going to be a bear.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about which USC Gundy is going to.
He's not going to USC East. He's not going to USC West. Like, do they have dove hunting in L.A.?
Do you agree with my theory that Spurrier retired because Augusta National reopens in mid-October?
I think that's why he took the job in the first place. Can't we all agree he took the SC job, a terrible program, just so Hootie Johnson would give him a membership? To Augusta?
He's actually not a member. I don't believe.
Well, he might not have a jacket, but I'm sure he plays anytime he wants.
Yeah, that is true.
And I'm sorry, unpopular opinion alert, and this might be my Florida State bias here. They're practically throwing a parade for Spurrier when he basically just walked out on his team. I mean, he's giving up middle of the year, and his team has to go play games still?
It is a little weird.
Well, I it's just proof that if you are good with the media, it absolves it absolves the narrative a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, if Bob Stoops were to walk away right now, like, this is a bad example. Okay, he's retiring in the middle of the year, and he committed to his players that he was going to coach this season. Did he not?
Yeah, it is strange. I don't know. Maybe there's more to the story.
That might be my Florida State bias. I've never liked Spurrier, but that's just me. Now, although Spurrier, I will say, he's a lot like Kobe Bryant for me. I used to not like him, but like the old Kobe, he's kind of funny, kind of just says whatever he wants. It's kind of how I feel about Spurrier nowadays. So I don't dislike him as much as I used to.
Does Vegas have odds on Spurrier becoming a analyst or a commentator on College Game Day?
It's off the board because that's what he's going to do, right?
Lock it up, right?
Yeah, him and Musburger calling games together.
Oh, my God.
That'd be fun.
Okay, so the other USC, if Kevin Sumlin turns it down, were you reporting that, or was that speculation, or what?
What? Reporting that?
You tweeted about it like six times.
I tweeted about it twice, maybe once, and I said Brian Keating, my coworker, convinced me that's who they should call. Not that I have sources, hashtag sources or anything.
Do you think
Chip Kelly's going to turn it down? That's who they're going to go to first.
I mean, what? That is such a strange situation. I was texting with one of my buddies last night. He's like, what would it be like if Gundy was like drunk at a game, like the LA Times was reporting about Sarkisian? I mean, that is bizarre.
No, that's wild. I mean, how does Pat Hayden, the athletic director, like when you're hiring somebody, you do some serious due diligence, and it obviously wasn't that big a secret that was going on at Washington. So not only is Sarkisian gone, that Pat Hayden should be gone for just negligence by hiring the guy.
Yeah, I mean, I'm
afraid to make a Gundy drunk joke, to be honest with you, is basically what I'm saying. Like, now, the arms flailing gif with Gundy when the band walked into practice, that might be what it kind of looks like, I guess, but no, it's a serious situation, and SC is still just one of the – it's a top five job.
Is it? Is it a top five job?
Absolutely.
What are the top five jobs? Texas, Michigan, Ohio State, USC, and Florida?
That's a good list. I'd go with that.
I mean,
I think Travis Haney wrote a story about it, and he said one coach told him, like, he lost a recruit to USC, and he's like, dude, they don't even have a coach right now. This is back when they're going through a coaching change. The kid was like, I don't care. It's still USC. They'll hire someone good.
Yeah.
He's like, that's what you're dealing with USC. Like, they're still USC, no matter who's coaching them. Yeah. It's still LA. It's still the glitz and glamour. It's still that program, you know?
So I guess maybe I should have thrown Bama in there at some point.
Yeah, Bama's probably on the list as well. But I do think Florida's in there for sure, even though they've been down a little bit.
Yeah.
Speaking of USC, are you excited for that 30 for 30?
Oh, my gosh, dude. I have triple-checked my DVR. I am it takes me back. I mean, it's just like every college memory, like every post, like 11 p.m. Saturday night college memory I have of a couple of those years are just getting home watching USC games at like midnight. I mean, they were so fun. Like,
That Reggie Bush punt returning against Fresno State.
Yeah.
I was watching that replay over and over and over. I don't think I went out that night in Stillwater. I just stayed home and watched the Reggie Bush replay.
I thought the coolest quote from the, and people will hate this. I love it. Some people will hate it. I thought the coolest quote from the 30 for 30 trailer was Matt Leinart saying, we knew we would never lose. Like we never like even considered losing. And it was just, I mean, they were so good. That team was so much fun to watch.
Yeah, that was great.
And then they lost.
Yeah, and I tell you, that's exactly like the vibe I got from that 2011 OSU team. They were very similar in that, like, when you talk to them, like, on game week, like, you could just tell, like, the thought of them losing was just not even like a consideration. Yeah. Like they just knew they were going to go out and win.
Yeah.
Similar.
It's pretty cool when a college team just kind of figures that out and gets to that point. Because I feel like that it's possible for that to happen in college. It's much more difficult for that to happen in like the NFL, because there's teams are just so much closer together and
too much turnover in the NFL.
They're so similar, but in college, every 5, 6, 7 years, like that can take place amongst a team, and I don't know. It's fun to watch. It's cool to experience that.
Did you ever see the a Football Life NFL documentary about the USC Texas game?
No,
I think it's. I don't know if the 30 for 30 could be better than that. To be honest,
that was on. Was that the one that was on NFL Network this time?
Yeah, NFL Network, A Football Life, and they have like Vince and Leinart like walking around the empty stadium, and like it opens. Like I implore everyone, hopefully it's on YouTube, but the opening thing is Matthew McConaughey and Snoop Dogg talking about it, which doesn't sound that cool in theory, but Matthew McConaughey goes into like his Lincoln commercial vibe, and it's like it was the greatest. Football, he goes, it was the greatest sporting event to ever happen on earth. And then bam, the music comes in. It's incredible. I implore you to find it.
That's spectacular.
It is, let's see here. No, it's the whole thing's not on YouTube anymore. It used to be, but.
Okay, well, last thoughts real quick. Whedon done as the starter in Dallas, you think?
Oh, is Matt Cassel really going to be a spark? I saw somebody tweeted, like, Matt Cassel covered in kerosene with a lighter couldn't provide a spark. Now, as much as I love Brandon, you and I both are on that island, it's a no-excuses leak. Like, you have to produce. Like, I know Dez is out. I know they've had issues. But it's the Dallas Cowboys and it's the NFL. If you don't get first downs and you don't score points, you're going to lose your job. That's just how the league works.
Yeah, it's not a great situation.
But he finally gets a shot and Dez isn't there. That's just the only...
I know. I'm running out of ways to rationalize his 5-18 record or 5-19 or whatever it is. He's just not as good as you need him to be. I mean, that's just the reality. And, you know... They don't spread it out. Maybe they don't spread it out because he would throw 8 picks, but they don't do it. So
they have no like Cole Beasley's like a fourth or fifth receiver, and he's like their number two now. You know what I mean? Like those guys can't get open. It's a total mess. And unfortunately, when the offense is a mess, you know the quarterback's going to get most of the blame.
Yeah.
But we have to, before we go, the OSU uniforms. That's your number one combo ever.
Oh my gosh. It was as good as I remembered it. It was awesome. I love that combination. How good have they been this year with the uniforms? Every week, but
I'll say this. I think you made this point a long time ago. The orange pants are the best article of clothing they have in the closet. Yeah. It's not close. Yeah. Like anytime you wear those, it's a good one. And I feel like that combo they wore is why they changed the uniforms in the first place. That's one of their more cutting edge looks with the helmet. The combination in general, I feel like that's when they envision changing their uniforms, that's what they kind of envisioned.
Yeah.
It was great.
It was great. I was fired up. I was excited. I was excited that they won, because I think last time they wore them,
they got beat by Baylor, right?
Baylor 2012, and they got beat. I think that's when it was.
Yeah, they resurrected the black, white, orange in Bedlam last year. Now they've resurrected your combo.
Yeah, it was great. I'm excited about the second half of the uni year too. They 6-0, 6-0 unis and actual games.
Yeah, and they just keep winning.
Yeah,
I keep waiting for the other shoe to drop, but they keep winning.
Did you see the Oregon uniforms?
Did not. I saw the GIF of Mike Leach wondering if he should go for two or not, though. I audibly laughed out loud so much I was crying when I saw that. The look on his face was just, I implore everyone to go. Oh, are you talking about the Lewis and Clark unis?
Yeah.
They finally wore those?
The Leach gif looked like, he looked like Bill Murray, like in a movie.
Like, it was unbelievable.
It was really incredible. Like I want a backstory. Like if a Washington State blogger like wrote 1,000 words on that GIF, I would read it.
Well, and the graduate assistant just imploring him to go for two, and he just acts like he's not even there.
What was he thinking?
What was he looking for?
What was the eventual response? I mean, I have a lot of questions. By the way, speaking of gifts, did you see Bielema at the Alabama Arkansas deal?
That was a disgrace.
That was not good.
He might get canned.
He's kind of a clown.
Yeah, he is. It's, yeah, that's just a clown move. Clown move, bro. I kind of forgot Mike Leach was even a coach. Did you?
Up
in Pullman, you're kind of in anonymity.
Yeah, he's kind of lost up there. So, okay, we will be back Thursday or Friday. Let's get Evan Epstein on the podcast. See if he'll do it.
I do have another guest idea, real quick. I hope he's still listening.
Okay.
Nate from the comments. Can we get him on here?
Let's do it.
He's a lot like Spurrier for me. I used to dislike him. Now I like him when he chimes in.
Yeah,
I like what he has to say.
He's sort of endearing.
He's consistent as the sun rising.
Yeah, it's great. He's been there throughout. So you got to
All right, Nate, comment on this podcast if you're listening. We'll love to have you on.
Yeah, I've got his email, so we'll reach out. We're efforting.
All right, bud. Okay. We'll talk to you on Thursday.
Talk to you later, Carson.